Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of Better in 3D. I'm your host, Matthew James Grenier, and I am coming for you with the new episode of Better in 3D. I said it twice, so you know I meant business. Hey, guys. New episode. Just going to be a solo Matt one again. Hopefully, we can get some of the kids on the next episode, but I didn't want to leave you guys without some new content for a while. And I had seen a few new movies, so I thought I'd come talk to you. So anyone who's not listened before, we are the Midwest premier drinking movie podcast. People with some average IQs but some above average livers, and we like to talk about movies and have a few drinks. Today I am drinking Alaskan Amber. It's a nice beer. I got a six pack of it and I kind of forgot about it. It was in my garage for a while and I was like, oh, this will be the one. So I'm having that today, and I'm thinking I'll be talking about a few movies with you guys. I know you guys were asking, where's the rest of the gang? Paul's out there planning an invasion of a mythical land that doesn't exist. Mike's out there. I think he's actually actively hunting me. I think that's what's happening. Like, every time I call him, he seems to go quiet, and then all of a sudden, like, I'll see, like, remnants of his presence in my peripheral. So I think he's finally going to take me out. Allison, as always, is out there trying to hug every cat and dog she can find. And old Molly's enigmatic in a way that I can't. Who can describe them? It's like describing the wind. You don't know. It's just something else. So yeah, that's what they're doing. Me, on the other hand, still living my same life, still watching movies, still doing the same. So I thought I would talk to you about it. All the stuff I've been seeing lately. First and foremost, the thing that I saw most recent, was something I should have saw day one. I feel bad that I didn't, just cause it's me. It's been all in the theaters for like 5 weeks, 6 weeks now. Just saw it, Mean Girls, the musical, the Mean Girls reboot, whatever you want to call it. I finally saw it, and frankly, I liked it, surprisingly. If people don't know about this whole saga, what is Mean Girls, the musical, and the movie, and all that kind of stuff. So, Mean Girls was a movie, came out in the 2000s sometime, written by Tina Fey, starring Lindsay Lohan, and it was like her big break, or not her big break, but like one of her big movies. And it was good. It was surprisingly good. It was a kind of a depiction of our time. The basic story is a girl who's lived out of country in Africa most of her life, goes to a high school and gets thrown in the deep end a little bit. And she gets adopted by the mean girls, the popular girls. And she tries to take them down from the inside, but becomes a mean girl herself. It's a whole, coming of age story, what they always do. Every generation has one of these high school movies, you had Clueless back in the day, or Can't Hardly Wait or things like that. But this was Mean Girls and very funny and very smart. And I was a big fan of that. I was surprised. I think it's on this show, cause I had never seen the original, for years. And then, one of the second or third episode that Leo was on, they made me watch it, and I was like, oh, why had I been missing this movie? The funny thing was, I actually owned the movie. I had it. I had bought it at a Blockbuster when they were going on sale or something like that, and it was just sitting in my house for a decade, never been watched. So I really enjoy the first one. I think it's really well written. I like Tina Fey. Everything she writes, I enjoy. I think 30 Rock is one of the most underappreciated sitcoms of the last 20 years. I love it. I like her in Saturday Night Live, so I thought I like it. So then she made that movie. Then she turned that movie into a musical, went on Broadway, was a very success, and then they made that musical into a movie. All this franchise needs now is to turn that musical into a TV show. And then we got them all. Then we got everything, I guess, Or, TV show would be the last part. So, either way, they brought it out the musical off of Broadway, onto the screens. They switched some stuff around from the original. They had to update the times and the lingo and stuff like that, but in general, it's pretty much the same movie, except for the singing and dancing. It's got, stars Renee Rapp, Jenna Fisher, Bussy Phillips, Tim Meadows is back, Tina Fey's back from the original one, even Lindsay Lohan makes a cameo in it. The main mean girls, they all look really familiar, but I didn't know them all, but they were in other things I've seen them in. Surprisingly good. I was getting real mixed reviews from my friends. They think I'd like it. I thought the music was good. I really enjoyed it. I liked the songs. I thought the choreography was good. I have a real... Musicals to film, to me, are always rough for me. Because I like going to see a musical on stage. I think that's enjoyable. When it's in a movie, sometimes... A lot of times it does not translate to me. Two things I always ask myself. Was this necessary to be Or what does it bring new to it? You know, like sometimes they'll make a musical and it's exactly the same as it was in the theaters. And it's like, well, I could have saw it in theaters then. I never saw this one in theaters, so I don't know. So maybe I like it a lot more than some other people just because I never experienced it on stage. But like, or if it, is it necessary to have like Les Mis, I liked a lot. And like the sets and the pieces and everything about it, the grandeur, yeah, that's necessary. Like you can, it's adding something to make it a movie, you know? I like Sweeney Todd or Little Shop of Horrors, but it's something like fantastic like that. Yeah, being the movie can make it beneficial because you can do things you just can't do on the stage. I thought The Greatest Showman, which was written for a movie, was great with that, with the choreography. Like if you have the benefits of special effects, let them, use them, you know, in a way that makes sense. Makes part of the saying. So I like the dancing in the musicals in this one too. I think it was over the top or anything. I feel like if I probably saw the musical and saw this and like, oh, they're basically the same. So maybe I wouldn't like it, but I liked it. I had fun. I'd enjoyed it. I feel like the updates to like make it a little more modern made sense, but it still felt like at the core. I mean, because it's the same writer, I get it, felt like the original. I like the original movie better, but I thought surprisingly well done. I don't know, like, if you've been a long time listener, if you've been listening for all, like, I think we're up to 202 on as far as episodes go, and I think so. You've listened to all 202 of them. You know, in my opinions of musicals are wildly sporadic and all over the place, but I have definitely warmed up to the genre a lot since the start of this podcast. All the way back in 2018, guys. That's when we started. 2018. I just realized it's been a while. we do this for a hot minute. So, yeah. But New Year's musical. Enjoyed it. I think it's going to be on Prime real soon. And then, or Prime or... It's one of the streaming services. Maybe it's Peacock. I'm not really sure which one it's on. But check it out if you can. I mean, I highly recommend it. I think Renee Rapp, who's kind of steals the show a little bit, is going to be a star. Obviously she's a singer and she puts out music and she performs and she tours like that and is pretty much the internet's darling a little bit. It's on a bunch of like TikToks and Instagrams like that. But I think very talented. I had to the point where I had to go look because I know they had been in other things and I was like, I'm going to go see what else she's been in if I've seen it. And I checked them out. I think she's got some real talent and I think she'll be an interesting person to follow their career. So that was one of my hot takes. I don't know the girl who plays Caddy's. I can't pronounce her name. Anjoria Rice. I don't know her name. I think she's very talented. I think she'll be in other things. A lot of the young people in this movie seem like, a lot like the last Mean Girls movie. Like, the people went on to do other things. I think we'll see most of this cast be successful in other places. Mean Girls. There we go. I was attracted by people I knew who didn't realize it was a musical. They were like, oh, they just, because of the world of reboots and remakes, people just thought they were rebooting it. I was like, no, there's an actual, like, it's actually different. They're like, oh, okay. So, got that, obviously. The next movie I saw was a Netflix original, which I'm shocked that it went right to Netflix. Well, I was shocked it went right to Netflix before I saw it. I mean, because, like, the pedigree behind it is fantastic. It's called Spaceman. And obviously, Adam Sandler has a production deal with Netflix. A lot of his movies go right to Netflix. I wonder if that's the reason this happened, because, like, it's not a comedy. It's a sci-fi drama, you know? And, like, frankly, the talent on here, it's I like the director, Johan Rennick. I believe he's done other things that I like. I mean, obviously, he's... he did that Chernobyl series I love on HBO. I think he's also done, like, he was associated with Breaking Bad at some point and Bloodline. He did a lot of TV stuff. You know, he's done a lot of that. So I think he did in Vikings and he did Bates Motel and things like that nature. He did The Walking Dead. I think this might be his first movie, though. So I guess that makes sense why he would be like Netflix might take a chance on him. But it stars Adam Sandler, Carey Mulligan, Paul Dano, and Isabella Rossellini. It's packed with good actors. I can never pronounce his name. Nayar, who's from The Big Bang Theory, he's in it. He's really good. It's a fantastical world. Basically, it's all about loneliness and love and a relationship set in a sci-fi series. The trailer, you'll see it kind of spells it out for you, and it's basic. I mean, it's a guy who's supposed to be going out to this, like, nebula that appeared in space, like, past Mars, I think. that's like been in our sky for like 5-6 years. So everyone on Earth is trying to get there to see, wait, why is this purple nebula of gas and energy in our solar system all of a sudden? So he's on a one-man spaceship, like, to go there and collect information about it. And it's going to be like a whole year, like the whole trip's going to take like 6 months there and back. And he's by himself. And the spaceship is kind of cool. It's kind of fun. It literally looks like weird 80s analog technology a lot of times. They say it's a Czech spaceship. And they're trying, like, multiple countries are trying to get there to them. I think the South Koreans are the ones right behind them. And he's got this, so he's all by himself. And he's living his life. And he's not doing well in his isolation. And because his wife won't call him back. And because they have like a space phone kind of deal. And he's saying, oh, there's something. They keep delaying, but she has left him a video message saying that she's leaving him because he left. And I think she just couldn't take that he was be gone. And in his, like, sadness, all of a sudden, one day, a giant spider-looking creature shows up in the spaceship, voiced, who can talk to him telepathically, voiced by Paul Dano. And you're not really so sure at the beginning if he's just going crazy or if he's really there. But this, he says that he's a traveler like him. He's an explorer, and he wants to understand what, like, humans are. He doesn't understand sadness. Like, he can see his minds and his memories. And from that point on, it's just a two-hand. I mean, most of the movies, like, him, then the spider will experience some of his memories and his dreams and stuff like that, and, like, make him remember more vividly, like, his past, and, like, he's, like, just what he did or what he, like, goes through his life. And so basic crutch is that he has taken his marriage and his family and everything for granted a little bit for his own pursuit of being an astronaut, I guess, his dream, and, like, what he, his commitments he made and stuff like that. It's a very somber, slow burn movie, but I liked it. I mean, I'm not gonna go like, oh, you gotta see this one. It's definitely not funny. It's definitely a straight up drama, you know. The acting's super. I think Adam Sandler's a great dramatic actor. Uncut Gems is great, you know. Punch Drunk Love is great. When he does his drama stuff, I always like it. He's great in it. And I love Paul Dano. He's one of my favorites. I've loved him since Ruby Tuesday. No, what was that? Not Ruby Tuesday. It was something Ruby. I gotta look her name. I have a computer next to me. I can look it up. What is that movie? Ruby something that he was in years and years ago. I mean, obviously, he's been in Little Miss Sunshine. He was in The Early Blood. He was in 12 Years a Slave. I mean, the guy, Paul Dano, doesn't do wrong by me. He was just in the great Prime show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He was in Swiss Army Man, but Ruby Sparks. That's what it was. Ruby Tuesday is the restaurant. Ruby Sparks is the movie that he first got my attention. I think that's he was in other stuff before that, but that was one that, like, I was like, oh, this guy can really do some good stuff in there. So I mean that's the first way. I guess Little Sunshine and Thoroughly Blood came up before that, but in the same vein around that, I was like he went from being an actor who was good to an actor like, I want to see everything he's in. I mean, he was the Riddler and he was good at it. So, but I digress. Spaceman is funny because he calls it's what he is. And I love, like, the spider character played by Paul Dano calls him skinny human. He never calls him by his name. He never knows it. He calls him skinny human every time. That's always what he calls him. It's this little set piece. Like, Zav is in the spaceship, and they're just kind of talking back and forth. But then there's them on Earth a little bit, and everything's just, it's got a little bit of a little bit of a Wes Anderson feel where everything kind of feels askew. Like, this is Earth, but it feels a little adjacent, and like some, at least with some of the technology and some of, like, the politics, like, I feel like they did that on purpose so that no one would be like, have any political agenda. They really took that out and made it, like, really, like, a different world a little bit. But I liked it quite a bit. But, like, it's just a simple drama. Feels very reminiscent of, like, the dramas I used to get in the early 2000s, you know, which I loved. So I mean, I'm not gonna say this is an over like the greatest movie I've ever seen, but it's a Netflix movie, so you don't have to pay. You're not paying for it. You're paying for streaming, but you're not going to the theater and putting down hard cash. I can recommend that if you like sci-fi or you like dramas. Like, you're probably gonna cry a couple times in it. It's that kind of stuff. It's an overall sad movie, but the movie is about sadness and how we deal with it, and that's what it is, and how we get there, and how something we're the cause of our own sadness. You know, it talks about depression and relationships, and, you know, what we mean to each other, and the promises we make and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd check it out if you like that kind of stuff, for sure. This has been the time of the year where usually a lot of bad movies get dropped, and I've seen a lot of okay movies this month. Mean Girls was like a B, you know, but it wasn't great. Other than Dune 2, which I talked about last one, which was unfucking believable. And anyone who says Dune 1's better, I respect your opinion. They're both great movies. So I'm not going to argue with that one, but like, I think we're not seeing the same movie. I'm talking specifically to my brother, Jacob, who tells me that them not giving us a scene of how they get off the sandworms with a group of people ruined the movie. Like, that was ridiculous. Like, you mean that 1 second scene where they were driving them, and because they never explained how they got them off as they were going through the desert. And I was like, who cares? They never explained how a lightsaber works, but you bought that. He's like, it just ruins it. Give me a scene. You know, like, I'm like, I don't know, man. Just enjoy the Dunes. Back to my original point. A lot of okay movies. And speaking of okay, we're going to segue into the next movie, Ricky Stenicki, which was a movie I was kind of excited about when I first heard about it months ago. But I hate to give the stigma, because obviously streaming services can make great movies. They come out around smile. Heck, I love Coda. I won Best Picture. It can happen. But most times when I hear a movie that's in production and I'm excited about it, and all of a sudden goes, oh, it's going straight, like Prime bought it or Netflix bought it. Like, oh, that usually means they didn't think it was good enough to put it in the theaters. Like, there wasn't enough to gamble on. They go, oh, we want to make the for sure bet on it. And that's how the bottles. If you're a studio and you make a movie and you're like, you're not super confident it's going to make a ton of money and someone wants to buy it, streaming service, yeah, take that money in front. But if it does really well for them, you don't get any more money. That's kind of the downside. But, safe bet. So Ricky Stenicki, which is a dumb title, and which when I first heard about it, like, that sounds stupid, then that's the point. So these three best friends as kids who got in trouble and they blamed it what happened on a fake imaginary fan named Ricky Stenicki, and they have been using that person as a scapegoat all their lives, even as adults. When they want to get out of things, they say Ricky's in town, or like, he's always got an emergency. He lives in Africa, his friend of theirs who like helps like with nonprofits like that, but like, remember the friends want to go do something. Like, oh, he's in rehab or needs a kidney. Something's going on. And like, the movie starts with them getting out of a baby shower to go see that. And they go and they have a great time. And they're in, I think, Atlantic City. And the three friends are played by Zac Efron, Andrew Santina, and the new other guy I didn't know from. So I'm looking him up real quick who he was. But he was really good in it. I wish I would have known that actor. But frankly, my computer is being real stupid about it. But I will find it eventually. They run into a male stripper played by John Cena, who does like an erotic singing show all about masturbation. It's really fun. Like, he's like an addict and he's a low life and it's peaceful. But he says he's an actor, and they're kind of nice with the bar, and then the bar is trying to kick him out. He kind of tricks him and get him drinks. And they're like, yeah, whatever, we're having a good time. We got this guy a drink, and then he's like kind of warmed up to like, oh, they're actually nice to me. I'm just teaching like shit around here. And they part ways. And then while they were at the Atlantic City, they turn off all their phones and they put them in airplane mode. So like, they're like, you can't track their location, like phone to phone like that. And the one character, Andrew Santino, who's a great stand-up comedian, hilarious. He has a really good podcast called Bad Friends. You've probably seen him on like your social media feeds. He has his own podcast called, Whiskey Ginger, which, because he's a redhead and he likes to drink whiskey. His character, his wife goes to labor, and he basically missed the birth of his kid because they were out partying. And like, everyone's so mad at him, they demand, like, they're trying to fix this, like, because of this lie. So they basically decide, like, they want to talk to Ricky, they want to like see Ricky. They never, none of these people met him, and for whatever one, like, this lie has gotten so convoluted, they go, what if we hired an actor to like be him for a weekend and there's like that, or for a party and blah blah blah. And because like, his the one character, Zachary's mother-in-law, or I guess his girlfriend's mother, I'm not sure if they're married or not in the movie or not, I don't think so actually, but she doesn't believe this person. Really, she's figured it out, like, this seems ridiculous, this person's a ridiculous person, he's so important to you guys but you never bring him around and he's always like causing issues. So they remember that John C's character was an actor and claimed to be, and they said, well, let's hire him, a few $100 and he'll do it. And it shenanigans from there. William H. Macy's in the movie. It's relatively funny. It's a comedy that feels straight out of like the 2000s, like the overdeveloped plot. Like, whenever they have those movies where what was that movie with Josh Gad and Kevin Hart where the wedding ringer, where he pretends to be his best man, it felt like his best friend and then be his best man. Like, those plots of movies are just so weird, and they used to be very popular, like this insane, elaborate lie to fool someone. And every time I'm always like, because you always know, eventually, the truth's going to come out. And then, like, you're always like, why do these people who they've been lied to this whole time forgive them? It's always that weird kind of like, all right, I guess I'll buy into it. But overall, pretty funny. John Cena is funny. Seen enough of his acting now where people say, oh, he's a great actor. He's a great comedic actor. I don't think he can do a drama. I just don't. I just saw another movie that he was in with Alison Brie, and he was supposed to play more serious, and that was not great. He's trying to be like an action star. He's good at the, you know, Peacemaker and things like that. And like you guys watch the Oscars, him being naked on stage was hilarious. So he's good in it. Zac Efron, I haven't seen Ironclaw, but in general, I find that he usually is pretty okay. But I heard he's great in that, so I want to check it out. But he's serviceable. You know, like frankly, most movies nowadays, he kind of plays the straight man. Like, he's not, he just kind of stands there. Like, everyone else, all the weird characters around him, almost every movie, he's not the guy. I guess other than Neighbors. Neighbors, he was pretty funny. But, like, a lot of times, he's just the straight man for everyone else being wacky and zany, which is fine, he doesn't make me go see a movie. Like, I see that him on his things, oh, I want to see the Zac Efron movie. He's like, oh, he's there. He's fine. You know, he does what he does. Things like that. But the other characters are interesting. Like, in general, they're all pretty good. But it's a C. It's on Prime. If you want to watch it, if you like, it's very raunchy. It's very hard R. There's a lot of, like, legit a lot of dick jokes, like a ton of dick jokes, like literally not just like, oh, like raunchy jokes, like literally jokes about dicks. So if you like that kind of humor, there's a ton of them. There's a one really, really funny scene with H. Macy, and I won't spoil it for you guys, where like they're talking about a lot of dick jokes. If you want to see, have a comedy and laugh, average, but it's not like, no one's like, you're not gonna be wasting your time. It's a C+ movie, you know, but once again, on Prime, has enough funny parts in it. I wish there was more, like, consistently. Some good highs, but in general, okay. Speaking of another generic comedy that came right to streaming, but I actually liked it more, was this movie Players. And just kind of like in the same vein we're just talking about, how it was like always an elaborate lie, always a con, and like you're rooting for these people. It went right to Netflix. It's called Players. It stars Gina Rodriguez, Dan Wayans Jr., Tom Ellis from Lucifer's in it. There's a few different people. I can't remember. She's from SNL. She's in it. There's a few other, like, there's a lot of, like, TV actors in it that you've seen in other things, but it's pretty decent. It's about this group of friends who most of them work at a newspaper together. Gina Rodriguez's character is, like, a sports writer, and, like, her friend's, like, an editor, and, like, the other one, like they all kind of work there, and, like, she's friends with old dudes, and, because she likes sports, I guess, and they have, like, they all get together and get each other laid. That's like, they have these elaborate cons, like, to, like, lies and plays. And so, like she helps them out. Like, she's all about it. Like, she doesn't want a serious relationship. It was kind of flipped. You've seen that movie 1,000 times. She's usually a guy who's, like, a player. And, like, at some reason, like, he either wants to be with someone or it's a dare or whatever. And makes him lie. So she wants to, like, she likes this guy because she thinks everything about him is perfect. He's, like, this British writer. And he's, like, well-traveled. He's handsome. Like, he ticks all of her boxes. So she wants to, like, make a plan not to get laid, but to date him. And it's this elaborate whole movie where, like, all the guys in the group are, like, bending her backwards, like, basically changing her personality and everything she likes so to be more, like, likable to him. And you know, and that's the, just like last one. And then people just find out what's going on. Like, you should like yourself the way you are kind of deal. Either way, it's funny. It's better than Ricky Sinicky. But it's a rom-com. It's a rom-com where they kind of gender swapped the stereotypical roles. Like, usually it's a guy doing this and he learns, oh, well, I like that girl along or whatever. Or actually, I actually like the best, you know, I actually like the best friend I didn't know. Like, there's always like that kind of like realization, like, oh, I'm being a piece of shit. I should be better. And like, look what's right in front of me kind of deal. That's the gist of this movie, but it's funny. It's well done. I like Gina Rodriguez. I mean, she's got a show out on Hulu called Not Dead Yet, where she talks to dead people as a obit writer. And I know I shouldn't like the movie show because it's probably not that great, but something about her, she's so charming, I keep watching it. And she's been in a few other things recently. She was in, you know, obviously Annihilation and Jane the Virgin and Awake. She's been in some stuff pretty that I've always liked. So I find her charming and I think she's a good actress. So, yeah, Players is one of the other movies that I have seen recently that were just released on in this month. That were kind of like, I think I went and saw that she was having a movie come out a little while ago and thought, oh, I'll try to see that. And then also goes on my Netflix queue. I'm like, oh, okay. Once again, usually a sign that it's not bad. I used to say straight to streaming movies are usually bad. No, we get good movies all the time now, but like usually they're like it's either they're good or they're average. I don't get a lot of bad ones per se, but because sometimes you can have like Old Guard, it's great, you know. Sometimes you get some, you do get some really good movies straight to streaming. I don't want to make a sound like that, but it usually makes people more aware of it when they're. But yeah, Players. It's another R-rated comedy, a lot of dick jokes, all that kind of things. But in general, I found it was a little bit better writing, a little more pacing was better. Like it wasn't long. It's like 90 minutes. Boom, boom. Like you've seen, you know what's gonna happen after like the first minute, like how the movie's gonna end. But you're on for a ride, and if you want to kill some time at night and just relax, I highly recommend it for that purpose. You know, but fun. Just a lot of fun. I'm trying to think if there's any other movies I've seen recently. I've been watching a lot of TV shows, to be honest with you, just because it's been that time of year. And frankly, you know what? We didn't do an Oscar show for the first time ever. And I was going to put one out with our predictions beforehand, but I just didn't have the time. So I guess I can talk about the Oscars, because they just happened, as far as who won and what won and all that kind of stuff. Like, I had a friend of the show, Bob McQueen, text me, goes, hey, I know, because we saw Oppenheimer before together. Me and him and Kenny went and saw the Barbenheimer. We saw Barbie and Oppenheimer same day, opening weekend. Very excited. And we all liked it. But he's like, hey, I know we really liked this movie and it was really good, but did it deserve like all these wins? He goes, his point was, it's not rewatchable. He goes, I have no ambition to rewatch it again. And usually for a movie to be sort of one of the best, which they're claiming this is the best movie of the year. And one, that's subjective, you know? And two, that's not always the case. I think in general, when they pick best picture winners, they definitely pick a movie that I would say, oh, it's at least in the contention. I might have liked something else, they might have something. But usually, most times, those movies stay around. But sometimes they famously don't, like Crash or Green Book, which, like, within a year or two later, people are like, oh, well, why do we all like this movie? You know, that kind of, usually, I just rewatch Green Book. I know it's got all its problems, but I still find the acting superb. And that's why I liked it the first time around. It was my number one pick of the year by far, but I when they were like, I was like, oh, okay, I didn't. There's always some problematic things with the story itself. But I thought what was so interesting with that movie was just the performances. Marshall Lee's fantastic, and Viggo Mortensen's fantastic, and that's what I was there for. They're good, not so much the movie. But in general, when they pick Best Picture, like Parasite, I've rewatched like two or three times, like when that came out. Like most of the movies that get paid Best Picture or have rewatchableness to them, but some of these don't. Remember I forgot what it was even called, that silent movie that won a few years ago? Like that, but sometimes it happens, like, you know, and very famous, they get it wrong a lot of years. Like, if you, 10 years later, like, find one of the movies that's still the most critically acclaimed and fan acclaimed, 10 years later, it's very rarely the best picture, but, like, the best picture is still in the topic. So, Oppenheimer, like, rewatchability should be a part of it. Like, do you want to, does it want to stay with you? And I was like, that's a great, great point. I feel like it's maybe, I liked Oppenheimer a lot, and I did watch it a second time at home right before the Oscars, because I just wanted to, like, remember it, and it doesn't have the same type of feel. Now, I told everyone you need to see this movie in theaters. People thought it was crazy because it's a movie mostly people talking and stuff. But I was like, nah, man, like the sound, like you need to be in cups. You need a room where you can't walk out of because you need to be focused at it. And the performances are great. But that is a fair point because, like, if you look at the parts, like, I think all the Oscars it won, the categories it won, and were deserving. It had great actors and it had great editing and it had great cinematography and things like that. I feel like the directing one, I was fine that he won Best Director, but it felt more like a Lifetime Achievement Award. He's had better films and frankly, not only is it crazy that Greta Gerwig didn't get nominated for Best Director, I think she should have won. I think like the director is the conductor of the orchestra, which is funny because Maestro got nominated and was about a conductor. And, like, you do everything. And, like, if it was any movie that needed, like, 1,000 hands to, like, put together to make that work, same thing would have been either Barbie or Poor Things. Both things movies were like, I don't know how you threaded that needle, but you did it, you know? But I'm fine with him winning because I like Christopher Nolan. I'm not a huge fanboy. Like, I have some problems with some of his movies. Like, Tenet wasn't great. And I didn't like Interstellar as much, nearly as much as everyone else. I mean, it was fine. I talk about rewatchability. I actually, you know what? I think about it. I watched Interstellar, liked it. I don't think I'll ever see it again, even though I got owned. So I own it. Someone bought it for me, gave it as a gift. Like when Chris is like, oh, you like that movie, right? Here's a gift. I go, it still sits there. I have not felt the need to watch it a second time. But no, I've rewatched Inception and obviously the Dark Knight trilogy and The Prestige and Memento. So I've seen some of his rewatchable movies. Like the per example, like it's like, oh, I didn't rewatch it. But so I don't know. I would guess I was okay with it winning. There's some other movies I would have picked, but you know, what do you do? I think I gave my top 10 list of the year. I put it as my number one movie of the year. So for the same reasons, because I finally, I kind of soured a little bit on it after watching it a second time. Cause I was really, that was great. It was a fantastic movie. And then I watched it and I was like, okay, all right. I guess away from a little bit. I mean, maybe it's number two. Cause I've rewatched almost every movie in my top 10, I have rewatched at least once. But I've watched Barbie four or five times, and I watched Nimona, which was my number three, six times. I watched Poor Things three times. I've watched, for the rest of my list, but almost every movie on the list, I just rewatched Bottoms. It was on my list. It wasn't that hard to get through. I was like, yeah, I'm in on it. Oppenheimer was a little bit of a struggle. I mean, it is long and it's slow paced, so maybe I knew what was gonna happen next, but I fast forward a little bit through some stuff? I'm like, yeah, I don't need to see this part again. But the acting is phenomenal. I'm so happy that's, Cillian Murphy, Cillian won for Best Actor. He's great. And Robert Downey Jr. worked for, won his Oscar for that. I still think it would have been better if he won years ago for Tropic Thunder. That would have been so much fun. Like, if he's an illustrious career, if that would have been his first Oscar win, was Tropic Thunder, would have been hilarious. But, you know, what are you going to do? I liked everything. There was nothing in there that really shocked me. People were talking about the Ryan Gosling Ken performance at the Oscars. It was. It was fun. It was fantastic, phenomenal. I think it's crazy that Billie Eilish is the youngest two-time Oscar winner, in a good way. Good for her. I mean, both times she won, she should. The song for James Bond and for this were great. I just sometimes forget how young she is, I guess. holy cow. And really, for music to win twice is impressive. For best song, scores and stuff like that, you get your Hans Zimmers, you get your John Williams, you get, those are repeatable people, because a lot of those people are in an industry that does it. Usually best song doesn't happen like that, usually, because it's especially nowadays when it's they want a pop star to sing it and like that, Whitney Houston won, The Bodyguard, but never did it again. They could have, a lot of artists don't want to do movies that much. A lot of times you get that one Oscar and they're like, okay, I got that off my system. They like to win if they can, but I don't think it was her goal either. I think she just got asked and she's like, all right, I'll do it, and proves her talent. So, but that's a crazy fact. Someone who's a music person winning it. I'm the youngest two-time winner, and having two Oscars is pretty, and won the, what they call the music called their Triple Crown. Everyone talks about EGOT, but for a song, the Triple Crown is if the same song wins an Oscar, a Grammy, and a Golden Globe. Those are the three awards for best song that you can get, and they did. So that's impressive that all people have done the Triple Crown for song. So yeah, is there anything else about the Oscars themselves that were particularly, crazy or anything like that? But yeah, it was a good show. I'm okay if Jimmy Kimmel doesn't ever do it again. He doesn't need to. I mean, I feel like every time he does it, he gets a little bit less funny. But he's the safe bet. Hey, I don't know. It's like when you're ordering pizza for a group and you don't know it, so you just ordered pepperoni and cheese oh, I got a cheese pizza, pepperoni pizza. It's safe for everyone. You're not gonna take the gambles. You're not gonna gamble that everyone likes a Hawaiian pizza or a chicken barbecue one. You're just gonna go with the safe bet. He is the safe bet usually, because some people don't like him or think his joke's a little demeaning or whatever. He's not offensive enough. He's not gonna raise it. Which I say every time they get a person that I think are good, it seems like people backlash hard against it. I really liked when Conan O'Brien did it years ago and he didn't like that, or when Jon Stewart did it, or Seth MacFarlane did it, and people get paid to do it. It's a lot of work. For free. It's a free job. You don't get paid to be the host, It's just basically because to show you off to the world. So, and I assume it takes weeks and months, I don't know how much time you put into it, but it's a thing. So I wish we could have a good Beyonce. John Mulaney's little speech where he does the Field of Dreams stuff. I've always said he would be a good host for the Oscars. He's more of a traditional comedian, but he's got the ability to make jokes. They want to make jokes about the like there's the art of making fun of like the industry and the movies that came out and people in the room, and you can do that, but I feel like he's able to make jokes while things are just more abstract, and he can just make fun of it. Like, making fun of how ridiculous like a 30-year-old movie is and making it hilarious, that's a hard thing to do. Just talk about ghost baseball players. Isn't that weird? You know, and making where everyone's laughing. I like the fact that Arnold and Danny DeVito came out there, and you assume it's because of the Twins reunion, but they're making fun of Batman and brought Michael Keaton in it. That was great. So it was good stuff. I enjoyed that quite a bit. The good note is, like, we're getting close to movie season, guys. Like, as we had Oscar season, and that's, like, pretty thing. But coming up real soon is going to be the summer blockbusters and all that good stuff. Couldn't get here fast enough because there really has not been a lot of new movies in theaters I want to go see. And I love going to theaters. Other than Dune 2. I said this before. Other than Dune 2, because it's great. And we all should love Dune. And I don't want to hear anyone else complain about Dune ever again. But, you know, we got that going on. As far as this podcast goes, I'm going to try to get more regularly getting out there, at least get you a couple shows a month. I think we have one planned pretty soon that's going to be more of a traditional show. But, you know, like, you know, to let you know that it is coming out sooner than later, more of that kind of stuff. So, you know, what can I say? That's going to wrap it up. That's the four movies I saw in the last couple weeks. And other than Dune 2, which is great, and I'll keep promoting it. But if I see anything else that I just absolutely love, I will let you guys know. But if you want to follow the show on social media, we are Better in 3D on Instagram. We're 3D Better on Twitter, or sorry, X. I am Not That Maddie on Snapchat, Instagram, and X. Plus, I am Garlic Baron on TikTok, or Macronair on Facebook. You can listen to our sister podcast, Peg with Paul, where me and Paul play cribbage and ask other crazy questions. We just put a new episode out of that just recently. The rest of the guys, let's see what I can do from memory. We got Paul is Paul _draws on Instagram. Allison is Thistle_wick at, I believe it is definitely Instagram and X. And they're on something else, but I can't remember. I feel a little bad. And Molly's Wimble Bagans on Instagram and Tumblr, and then Mike is Mike Detterman on all things including LinkedIn. So if you want to offer him a job, go do it. He's there. Go see the guy. So other than that, I think that's everything. Until next time, bye.